Hello and welcome to another open house segment here at Community Media. My name is Frank Kozak. I'm president of the Adams County Trout Unlimited chapter, and I have the pleasure today to be speaking with some members of the Watershed Alliance of Adams County. Here with me, Pat Noggle, V. Trin, and Deborah Kravchek. Let me say that correctly. Special group, I think, because of the work dealing with water in Adams County, which, in my opinion, I think in most people's opinion, would be the most valuable resource in the county. So with that, I'd like you maybe take a moment just to introduce yourselves.
Okay, Frank, thank you. My name's, as you say, Pat Noggle. The Watershed Alliance started in the year 2000, when I was a charter member, and early I was a president, and then we have term limits, and I rotated back when I became president again. I'm currently the vice president.
So how many years have you been involved then at the board level?
Well, let's see, it would be at least 12.
Okay, a lot of history, okay. Mm-hmm. And V?
I'm the watershed specialist with the Adams County Conservation District, and I was part of the initiative that established WAC.
Okay.
WAC formed as an initiative from the Conservation District, recognizing that if we enabled a group of volunteers with very similar, if not parallel, goals and missions, that we were helping ourselves do our jobs.
Okay. Yeah, and Deborah?
I'm Deborah Kravchuk. I am the new kid on the block. I took the Master Watershed Steward class last year, and that's how I got involved. Very shortly after finishing the course, I was voted onto the board, and I'm very happy to be here.
Well, the board saw talent, and
that's precisely what happened.
Yeah,
Deborah's a very good volunteer and very knowledgeable.
Yeah, great. So for those that don't know about the Watershed Alliance, tell us about it.
Okay, well, as V said, we were created out of the Adams County Conservation District. They signed our original Articles of Incorporation back in the year 2000. And we operate independent of them, but they are certainly a resource to provide advice and guidance to what we do as an organization. What we do is has evolved over the years. We used to get six-figure grants back when that kind of money was available, and have done stream structures and things like that. And we've all evolved over the years. We've used to do stream cleanups, but we looked at what really helps the watershed. And 7-8 years ago, we focused on trees. And we originally started with a grant from the South Mountain Partnership, $5,000 to buy trees, and we planted with two local cooperating landowners, and then we evolved from there. And I'll let V talk about the larger tree effort, but it grew to quite a sizable effort over the years.
So what prompted the change in maybe your focus, so to speak, from more stream-oriented projects to tree planting?
Well, we were looking for something to do that benefited long-term. Like stream cleanups, you can do them every year and the stream gets dirty again. The trees, though, and they last for decades, if not a century, and they're providing benefits to the stream. Mm-hmm. They filter out nutrients and they provide shade if it's a riparian buffer, meaning trees right beside the stream. They also provide food for the macroinvertebrates that are in the streams, and it's long lasting. So that's the main reason, and we could get a lot of people involved. So all that fit right in with what we want to do.
And V, were you involved with that transition?
Not initially. I wasn't always, or haven't always been, the watershed specialist. I started in 2000 and transitioned to an ag position, but now I'm back.
Okay.
But I am involved now as we transition away from, let me back up. There was an initiative at the state level called Keystone 10 Million Trees that has been where the Watershed Alliance and Adams County Conservation District forming the Adams County Planning Partnership, received our trees to distribute to Adams County. That program, that funding has gone away at the end of 2025. So we're pivoting within the Watershed Alliance and the Conservation District to focus more on growing our own stock. So we're trying to get a program up and running where we have a group of volunteers raising seedlings in their backyards with nuts and acorns, seeds collected and germinated, and hopefully we'll have something to give away this fall.
Interesting, very creative, right?
Yeah.
You know, that was like when you said you want to plant your own trees, I'm like, well, where are you going to get the property? But you're going to use volunteers.
We're going to use volunteers, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be noted that we got our trees before from the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. It's part of their initiative. And they've been really good over the years, not only with the trees, but they have tree protectors and bird netting and stakes and all the things you need to go out and plant a tree.
Okay. So variation. Okay. So now you've come on board and you're seeing this going on. A year long, I guess, on the group. What's your take on what's going on right now with the organization?
I am a teacher, and I've taken on the role of education. So I go into schools and do programs at schools, the library. We've done a program with Trout Unlimited at Sacklers Bridge. And to teach middle school and fourth and fifth graders about how the water is kept clean and why you need to keep it clean. And we do a program where we teach the children the difference between a clean stream and a dirty stream in the hopes that they will go home and share that with their parents. And as a family, start to use that information to keep the streams near them clean. We educate them about the watershed in general. The really cool thing about Adams County and its watershed is that all of the water that starts and flows through Adams County starts in Adams County. So we have 1,300 miles worth of streams in the county. And by helping the children understand that and how to keep them clean and why trees are important, like Pat said, the reason that the partnership is working with us on this is to help future generations understand the importance of taking care of what they have. Yeah, and so by doing these education programs, it's been a big help.
Yeah, it should be noted, we're the Watershed Alliance. We're not the Stream Alliance. You know, the quality of the water in the stream is directly correlated with the land use around it, which is why we're looking at trees. And Deborah brought up a point about the teaching young folks. We do also for 7 or 8 years now have been planting trees at the Gettysburg Gary High School. We do it twice a year. We go over and plant 100, 150 trees with spend a day there teaching these students the benefits of trees and repairing buffers and how to properly plant a tree. And sometimes we have extra trees, we send them home with trees. And V does more than that. You have other schools you're working with, V?
Yes, we do. We provide seedlings to this year, sorry. This year is going to be New Oxford, expanding to Upper Adams and I believe Littlestown. And St. Francis. So we'll be expanding it's called Install and Educate.
Okay.
So we're sort of growing our tree planting.
Trees endeavor, educational endeavor, not so much in the streams so much anymore?
Oh, no, we still do streams. We do water testing. We have a program that started out 25 years ago, as Deborah has mentioned before. But the program started with the Office of Aging called Environmental Alliance for Senior Involvement, and we've evolved to the point where they realized it wasn't their core mission, so the Watershed Alliance took it over 4 or 5 years ago. And we test 8 to 10 streams for nitrates and phosphates And we're trying to test it because there's a concern about the Chesapeake Bay, and the pollutants that they're concerned about are excess nitrates, excess phosphates, and sediments. So we have most of our testing setups at the boundary of the county so we can get a good idea for what we're exporting. Because mm-hmm. a lot of what you see is based on models, but as a former engineer, I like real data. So we go out and get the data on, we do that in the streams. We also, in the last several years, have done pathogen testing. And Deborah, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
One of the things that we looked at is DNA. Mm-hmm. And we found that most of the DNA is human mm-hmm. In the water supply. But it's
when you say the water supply, is that pervasive across the county? Or is that in certain areas that you sampled?
In the areas that have been tested.
Right, okay. So.
Pervasive where we tested. We have a pretty good spread of where we tested. Mm-hmm. At least six streams, I think.
Okay.
So we've also participated in the salt survey to see, tested in the fall to see how much salt has trickled into the watershed. And then we were supposed to test again in January, but all the streams were frozen and we couldn't do that. But that testing is coming up soon to see the effect of salting the roads, salting the sidewalks, the parking lots, because that eventually trickles down into the water supply.
Yeah.
And that's not just the city or town central, but private wells also.
Yeah, one of the things that we learned from the salt survey so far is we did it in October. Well, nobody's salting roads in October, so we're getting the salt measurements in the stream. So where it's coming from is the salt. You think, well, my salt in my driveway isn't going to the stream. No, but it's going out in your yard and it's going down to the groundwater mm-hmm. and then comes through the groundwater back to the stream. So that's why they tested it in October.
Get your background conditions pre-salting yeah. and then,
yeah. Yeah, it's base flow. Most of our streams, you know, within two or three days of a rain, it's what the water you see in there is actually groundwater seeping in what we call base flow. So you have salt in there. You also have nitrates and other things that we measure.
All right, so water, trees, education. Am I missing something? And it's kind of a loaded question because you already have a tremendous amount that you're doing in a number of different arenas. And I mm-hmm. kind of say that tongue-in-cheekly, what am I missing? Because you do a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, education is probably the biggest one. We've touched on that a little bit. Deborah's been a really good addition from that standpoint. But we have an e-news that I recommend anybody that's interested in anything we're doing, but sign up for that. You can get on our website at adamswatershed.org, and there's a button you can click on and you can get our e-news, and if you don't like it, you can unsubscribe. But okay. We usually have, well, I always have interesting articles and that with ties back to everything we're talking about here. And if a lot of our activities require a considerable volunteer effort. For the trees, we'll use 70 or 80 volunteers for each time we do it, and because there's a lot, just like anything, there's more to it than meets the eye.
Right.
People show up in the trees and everything's there. Well, it took a lot of work to get all that mm-hmm. organized and there, separated, sorted by order. Took a lot of volunteer effort. So the website is a good place to get involved if you want to get involved with that or any other.
And what's your website address?
AdamsWatershed.com.
AdamsWatershed.org.
Okay, thanks, V.
Well, that's kind of where my next question is, how do you accomplish all this? And you answered partly with the number of volunteers for tree planting. How about the other endeavors? Do you have many volunteers that participate with those? Or?
Well, the pathogen study that Deborah mentioned had a considerable, maybe 20 volunteers for that. Because we had to do that in a certain sequence. We had to do it 5 weeks in a row under certain conditions. And then we had to take all the samples under ice over to labs in New Oxford, and they tested our for E. coli. Mm-hmm. And that was a pretty big effort.
The chemical monitoring, there's a monthly monitoring for that program, and there's volunteers, Pat's one of them, that goes and collects water samples at the stream, and then they bring them back to do, we call it in-house testing, but testing under more controlled. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. If someone's interested and they want to help with water testing, they may not know anything about water testing. How do you help them get up the learning curve? How do you train them? Just to maybe give folks out there a comfort level that if they want to participate, they're going to be held by the hand for a little bit till they get up to learning.
Held by the hand might be a good way of terming it, but what we have is we have a manual that's very specific on, because as you know from a science background, consistency, mm-hmm. following testing protocols and procedures is the only way you get good data. So we have Deb Wentling and
Gail Ann
Riekert are doing that. And they're the prime contacts with ALARM that Deborah mentioned before. And we get a lot of our protocols from ALARM, which I forget what ALARM stands for, but it's Dickinson College. And they've been, I think they started originally based on acid rain studies. And they've evolved to the point where they help a group like ours make sure we're doing something scientifically relevant. But can I go back to the pathogen thing? Because I think it's important, particularly with the Trout Unlimited folks. And I know it's working because I've had feedback when I'm up there fishing, mm-hmm. that based on our results, I think 17 out of 21 sites that we tested didn't meet the standard. So,
what does that mean, doesn't meet the standard?
Well, when people say a stream is impaired, a lot of times they just look at aquatic biology impairment, but there's also a recreational impairment. So if you're over 125, I forget the units now, it's impaired. In other words, you should not go in that water.
Because there's a potential hazard to human health. Is that
potential,
accurate?
Yes.
Yes.
But we've found it so pervasive, I think there's a couple things I would conclude. One is assume that the stream you're going into has pathogens in it.
Because within the county.
Within the county.
Okay.
Because most of them do. Take certain precautions. Don't go in with cuts. Don't drink it. Here's one of my favorites. If you're going to have a sandwich out in a stream, make sure you have hand sanitizer along. Anything that can transfer. I'll say this. I don't want to sound alarmist, but I still wet wade. In other words, I don't wear boots most of the time. So it's not fire alarm alert kind of thing. It's just something you have to be aware of and be careful about.
Okay. So there's this contamination, mm-hmm. Across the county. Let me ask, what's being done about it? Is that your role, or is that passed on to some other organization, or? You're laughing. Maybe I shouldn't ask.
No, because we've debated this for some time now. What a big so what? So what? Our so what is that we educate. Well, if in our e-news and mm-hmm. probably articles, when water warms up, we'll probably put those guidelines out that I just mentioned. We have determined fairly assuredly through DNA testing that it's human related, which most likely we go back to failed septic systems. So we are looking at, we're finding inconsistency between townships on the requirements to inspect septic systems. So we're not sure what to do about that. But we've talked to DEP and—
DEP is?
Department of Environmental Protection. Okay.
And within Pennsylvania.
Within Pennsylvania, yeah. Thanks for the clarification. And the we're not sure at this point what to do. The fix can be, there are some areas where they've mandated sewage systems mm-hmm. to go in. So We're not promoting that necessarily, but but again, the most thing is to be aware that it's there. Mm-hmm. Just don't drink the water, don't swim with sores.
We've talked about another series educating the public on septic system maintenance and just learning what happens when you flush your toilet. It just doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm. So you include some of this discussion about contamination in your discussion with the children on watersheds?
We do. We do. We set up a model with the children using fabric. Mm-hmm. We'll make a stream on the floor, and we'll put trash in it. We'll put leaves in it. We'll put branches in it to teach them what the difference is between a healthy stream and a not healthy stream. So before, Pat was talking about trees providing shade. The shade keeps the water temperature down, which enables more oxygen in the water, which enables the fish to live and the macroinvertebrates. So, you know, cleaning up a stream, taking the dead branches out, sometimes is good, sometimes it's not, because that provides shelter for the fish and keeps the predators away. So we try to make sure that they understand that it's okay to take a bottle out of the stream if you find it, but don't necessarily take everything out.
Right.
And the importance of not putting things into the stream because of the way plastics are getting into all of the fish and the macroinvertebrates, it can be a problem. And if you go out into a stream and you pick a rock up and you turn it over, you will see those macroinvertebrates there. And if you put it under a dissecting microscope, you will see that they do have plastic in their intestinal tracts.
And these little microinvertebrates.
Yeah.
Macroinvertebrates. And macro. They're big, meaning they're bigger than that. Yeah, but, and most fly fishermen are well aware of it because that's when they do nymph fishing, that's what they're trying to stimulate. But I'd like to make a point here that the testing we've talked about now, we go out once a month and you get a sample. And if you look at the results, it'll go da 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 da. Yeah, so it's, you have to have a long series of data. But no matter what, we're not there to monitor it all the time, but the macroinvertebrates are there all the time. So you can do surveys where you go out and net the stream, and you look at all the macroinvertebrates that you collect, and some of them are sensitive to pollution and some are tolerant, and you have indexes, and you can determine the stream quality, and that's probably the best way to do it because the macros are there all the time. They're there for the blips and the toxins and everything else. But I want to make this point, if I could. The Interstate Commission on the Potomac River Basin has just completed an extensive study using macroinvertebrate surveys. And one good conclusion is that they concluded over the long term, like the last 20 years, there's been significant improvement in the waters and going into the Chesapeake Bay. But the study is run by Dr. Claire Buchanan, I believe. Anyhow, she's going to be our featured speaker at the Adams Watershed Alliance annual dinner on April 16th. At 7 o'clock. So we'll have a short business meeting, but then she's gonna talk for a half hour, 45 minutes to talk about this very topic.
Very interesting.
And we would love for the public to join us consider membership.
Make that point again. Go ahead.
The annual meeting will be on April 16th at 7 o'clock at the, we call it the Ag Center, on Old Harrisburg Road. You can again get on our website and there'll be an announcement on there. But the speaker, I think it's a very interesting topic. If you're interested in water quality, the macroinvertebrate survey is the best way to determine that. And we've done them in the past. They're a good educational tool because I hate to admit this, but before I started fly fishing, I had no idea there were little bugs in the stream. So what are these fish eating? There it is.
They're a great way to engage children as well. They get their hands and feet wet,
and they get to flip over rocks and
look at creepy crawlies. And if we're plugging,
plug away. That's right here.
April 23rd at the Ag Center from 6 to 8, there will be the Earth Extravaganza. And I know TU is going to be involved, but the Interstate Commission on the Potomac River Basin will also be present as well with macroinvertebrates. They collect insects from the streams and bring them in a tank, and they'll have them available for the kids to check out.
So a little more detail on that, the Ag Center and location and timing of the extravaganza?
April 23rd on the evening.
3 o'clock, I believe.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it is.
Okay.
3 to 7.
3 to 7.
Okay. And the address of the Ag Center?
670 Old Harrisburg Road.
Okay. And will you have the milkshakes there again? You
know, we will not have milkshakes, but we will have food trucks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Tiedemann Creamery will be there.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They'll be there, but it's more than us and the ICP and Trident Unlimited. I think we have a...
We have almost 20 organizations registered.
Yeah. Okay. Again, tell the audience a little bit more about that event. What's the purpose? What can they enjoy coming to it or learn coming to it?
It's an event to foster an appreciation of the natural resources and what we have to offer in Adams County. We've invited, like I said, about 20 organizations are coming, including Trout Unlimited, Watershed Alliance, Alliance for the Chesapeake Bay. The Park Service is going to come. Strawberry Hill is going to have animal ambassadors. We'll have the Game Commission and Fish and Boat Commission bringing in belts and furs. So there's lots of hands-on activity for kids, a lot of interaction available for kids to learn about the organizations and the natural resources that are available for their enjoyment in Adams County.
Yeah, in addition to the stands, they're going to have featured speakers, I believe, speaking at various times.
Okay. As well for...
Yeah, so it's a very good educational opportunity.
All right. Oh, Pat, I know you have...
Can I say the date again? So like, now that I remember, there's so many events in my head, but April 23rd at the Ag Center, 670 Old Harrisburg Road from 3 to 6.
Day after Earth Day.
Day after Earth
Day. Close enough. Yep. So, but you have a number of slides. I don't know if you wanted to talk to them at all.
Well, we covered a lot of stuff, and we can slide through if you want to. Should I do that?
Your call.
Okay. This is just showing what Deborah originally said, the water, no water runs into Adams County with very few minor exceptions. It all runs out. So all you see there on the screen, everything greenish goes to the Susquehanna River and everything blue goes to the Potomac River. And we don't really have any, we do have some reservoirs, but they store water in pipe it over to Chambersburg and Waynesboro. So this is all we have here for water in Adams County.
Okay.
Let's see what else. We mentioned the DNA testing. Well, this is what you get into with DNA testing. What we're doing there is we take samples and put it in that syringe, and on the left-hand side, there's a filter there. So you push it in until it refuses. In other words, the filter clogs up. Then you take that filter and you send it away for analysis for DNA. Okay. And you can see we're using rubber gloves. It's all very procedurally oriented. Here's the pathogen study. It's hard to see, but the all those orange things are bad places.
Oh.
You can see it's pretty well spread. There's a couple green dots. This isn't the best, but most of the green dots are in the upper reaches of the Conewago.
So bad is defined by exceeding some regulatory standard.
Yes.
That creates a health hazard. Okay.
Yeah. And what we did there, it's, you know, we did it five times. So I forget the term we used for the average, but it was, if you exceeded one time out of the five, it was just considered in between. But some of them exceeded... Totally.
Totally. All the time?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
What else did I... Oops, I'm sorry. This is, if you get on our website and go on to stream monitoring, eventually you can... This is for Tom's Creek. And I picked this one out because it looks good. But that's phosphates, and it's really, as you can see, very low phosphates. And that's just since we've taken over the program. We still have the data that Deborah mentioned that we're working with Alarm to incorporate into a 20-year continuum.
That's an impressive data set.
Yeah, and there's the nitrates for that same stream.
Okay. I think it would be a good idea to mention that the phosphates and the nitrates are the offshoot of fertilizer, mm-hmm. Which people might not understand. So you put fertilizer in your grass, you put fertilizer on the crops, and eventually it ends up in the water.
Yeah, well, fertilizer, sewage, manure, they're, you know, nutrients that come out of those products actually.
One of my favorites is I test rainwater for nitrates, and nitrates in a rainwater can be up to 2 milligrams per liter. So there's a lot of sources. If you look at any studies, they call it atmospheric deposition because it's really coming down when it's raining too. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of sources for these nitrates.
So I'm just curious. So Joe Average homeowner, he wants to fertilize his lawn or use some improvements. Are there alternatives to some of the products that are going to have maybe somewhat of an adverse impact on water quality?
That all depends what kind of lawn Joe homeowner wants. If he wants that nice pristine green lawn, then he's going to have to use something. If he wants clover and other wildflowers in there, he doesn't need fertilizer if he plants the right kind of yard.
You really should get a soil test as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can get one from labs or Penn State. Extension office has soil test kits. You can pull some plugs from your lawn, send it off to the lab, and then they'll give you a recommendation for fertilizer if you need fertilizer or not.
Yeah. Okay. One of the best practices that's promoted by a lot of environmental groups is called, Turf to Meadow. Okay. Yeah, where you don't really need 5 acres of green lawn out there. Mm-hmm. Let a couple of them grow up and create wildflowers, as Deborah mentioned.
Okay.
Help all kinds of wildlife.
Yeah, assimilate in a more natural environment. Okay.
And I assume that's part of the education that you have going on within the county?
I'm sure we've touched on it.
Yep. I mean, there's so many areas you could touch on with all you do. Well, let me ask you, so I see 3 of you here. You talk about a number of volunteers showing up for different endeavors. Who else is behind the curtain that makes all this happen? This is a tremendous amount of work that's being done, and good work.
Well,
or is this it?
We have 12 folks on the board, but we have people not on the board also involved in this. You hit it on a key point, and I'm sure you do enough volunteer work to know that getting the volunteers there is the easy part. Mm-hmm. You have to coordinate what are you going to do, how are you going to do it, get the materials there, pick dates. I mean, there's a lot that goes behind having a successful volunteer effort. And that usually goes to the board, or we have subcommittees. Mm-hmm. Each activity has a certain dedicated group of folks. Mm-hmm. Like we had a pathogen subcommittee, and we have a tree planting subcommittee. So it spreads the work out.
Okay, all right. If someone's interested, again, how to best get in touch with you?
Well, the website, we don't have a phone. We don't have an office. So the website is one way. We have a Facebook page. That'd probably be the best way. The getting the e-news, which comes out usually about the first or second day of the month, every month, also usually has connections that you can come in and communicate with us.
Separate track questions. You mentioned that you historically, sadly, had quite a lot of success with getting grants.
Mm-hmm.
What are your main means of funding now for the organization?
Well, we still get grants. Most of them are smaller. South Mountain Partnership, as we've gotten several grants from them, I believe, around $5,000. But we've been very successful with the giving spree. So we have funding, and we have memberships. the income. Anything else V you can think of? We don't really sell anything or, right, so our revenue streams are pretty, but what we do is try to, we don't have major expenses. You know, we have the obvious stuff that you have to have for an organization like liability insurance and things like that, but we get the office space. We don't have an office, but the facilities at the Ag Center, you know, the Conservation District donates all that. Right. So we've been able to keep our expenses low.
Okay. How about all the sampling you do? Is that donated material or just comes from EPA or?
It's not donated. It's we buy it from.
Yes, that's an expense. Okay.
It's an expense. Okay. Yeah, we've been fortunate enough to get enough income to cover that.
Okay. So you're doing great things, and hope the audience out there is hearing this, and maybe some folks will say, "Well, I want to be part of that, or help out, or help fund that."
Mm-hmm.
And you'd open your arms up and say, "Come on in."
Come on in.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
We haven't rejected anybody yet. So.
All right. So if you had to leave the audience with a key aspect of your organization that you want them to know, what would it be?
Well, the key aspect to me is water quality is so important and fragile. And if you ever, I'm fortunate enough to lose it, it's very, very, very difficult to get back. So it pays to take care of it now, do whatever you can to preserve our water quality.
And V?
I'd have to reiterate, it's so much easier to keep a resource clean than it is to try to remediate and clean it up.
Deborah?
Adams County is very unique in where our water comes from. And I think it's important that people understand that. Like we've been saying, all the water that's in Adams County starts in Adams County. And so it's up to us to protect it. And it's up to us to make sure that what we send down into the Susquehanna or the Potomac is protected, because it helps more than just us. But the water starts here.
Yeah, okay. Anything else you'd want to pass on before we wrap up here?
Well, just to thank you for the opportunity to talk. We enjoy talking to folks about water. If anybody needs a speaker for their group or whatever, we go out and give presentations. So you can contact us through various means, me personally if you know me. So we're willing to reach out.
Yeah, and I appreciate the passion that you show for what you're doing. I mean, obviously, great cause, very important cause.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's it for today's segment. I hope you've enjoyed this and find some interest in this organization and maybe throw your head into the ring. Frank Kozak, thank you very much.